2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Another episode of the Taco Tuesday PGA DFS podcast, presented to you by DFSArmy.com. This week we are going to be headed towards the first week of the FedEx Cup playoffs. Now, this will be the first season that we're using the new three-event schedule for the playoffs. It's going to be the Northern Trust this week, where it's the top 125 people in FedEx Cup points. And then, you know, there will be a regular standard cut, top 70 in ties. I'll make the weekend this week. And then next week, it's a no-cut event, the BMW Championship, where the top 70 in FedEx Cup points, not the people that make the cut this week, but just the top 70 in FedEx Cup playoff points will make the BMW Championship next week. And then after that, the Tour Championship in Eastlake, top 30 in playoff points, just like they do every year. So this will be the last full field cut event of the season. The PGA Tour, I think it's done a really good job of sort of bowing out and doing its big hoorah right before the NFL and college football season begins and sort of takes up all the attention. And of course, we're ready for that here over at DFSArmy.com. And reminder that at DFSArmy.com, if you sign up today with promo code TACO, you get you a lifetime 20% off discount of our product. We cover every daily fantasy sport and got a lot of football stuff on the docket coming up. You know, you already got season-long stuff coming in. They're doing really good work over there. You definitely want to come check us out. It's an all-inclusive package, so all sports covered. For one low cost, get access to our coaching channels, or you can come talk to us and ask us, you know, questions whenever you want. And you know, that's definitely one of the best parts of the community there. It's a really good community that we've got going on. The golf room, especially, it's really chill, really fun place to be. And yeah, you get access to the research station, the Domination Station lineup optimizer. Which has really come a long way. A lot of awesome tools that you can use when crunching lineups now. And we've got more cool updates coming in the future. So check us out, DFSArmy.com, promo code TACO. And yeah, before I go into this Northern Trust and talk about the course a little bit, I just wanted to go over my notes from last week. Turns out of all the core plays, all the GPP main plays, everyone recommended in the notes did make the cut, and we had several of them in the top five. Of course, Webb Simpson was a core play here. A bit of a no-brainer. I think he was the highest-owned golfer, but he ended up finishing second. He always just absolutely crushes that course in his hometown. We were on Victor Hovland, who had another top five finish here, and Byung-Hung An, who's looking like he was going to win the thing for a little while there, ended up backing up into a third-place finish, but that's someone that we're definitely looking at a lot moving forward. Such a good golfer, and, you know, so good at tee to green, just can't putt. It's definitely what we were looking for last week, and also Jason Kokrak was on him as a leverage play, did finish sixth. Then going through the fades, you know, had Hideki Matsuyama listed as my number one fade. He missed the cut finally. Jordan Spieth, he had him as a fade as well. Like, I have pretty much half the season. He MDF'd, not very good. Chez Reavie up there. I love Chez, but just didn't really, you know, click for me there. And he finished T48. And Cameron Smith also, $9,000. That was definitely a big fade for me. And he also missed the cut. The only one I seemed to have missed there was Joaquin Neiman, who I thought would, you know, regress a little bit back to reality, but he's still rolling. He's rolling really well and finished T13. So yeah, that was last week. We had a really good week as far as the Wyndham Championship went. We had some pretty big wins from members, of course. A few weeks ago, we had that runner-up finish in the Millionaire Maker. That was absolutely huge by C. Canelo. And this week, we had a member tripping up. He accidentally entered the winner-take-all $1 instead of the regular short game $1. And it was looking like a complete waste at first. Ended up taking it down with almost the perfect lineup. Just missing JT Poston, who ended up winning, and pretty much no one had him. It's definitely someone that we've been on a whole lot this season. And also had a guy win the rounds 1 through 4 showdowns. I've been doing really well with showdowns lately, finding a lot of really good plays there. Our coach, DFS Up North, Josh, he does a really great job with showdown notes. And we try to get that optimizer loaded with showdown projections each round. And so we had a member who was in the round 1 through 4 showdown, had two entries make it to the final day, decided, screw it, I'll run a train because it was such a top-heavy payout, and ended up winning $2,000 apiece. So that was a really nice win there. Let's keep these big wins going as we go through the rest of the season here and finish out. It's not even really finishing out here. We're pretty much turning right back around into the swing season as soon as the playoffs are over here. The real actual off season is for like a month in December after the fall swing season ends. That's going to be extended this year, so you can pretty much think about it as like a preseason almost. It's not really, though. It's pretty long this year. We'll see some new events and some events that have been shifted that way. And there will continue to be quite a bit of edge in those contests as people pay more and more attention to football. And also as football brings in new players who might want to mess around with some golf in the middle of the week as they're waiting between NFL slates. So it's usually a pretty good time to play. Of course, we'll have you covered through the entire fall swing season. But first and foremost, looking at finishing strong this year at the Northern Trust. And this year we'll be going back to Liberty National Golf Club. So the BMW Championship, or not the BMW Championship, the Northern Trust. It's just called the Northern Trust, not the Northern Trust Classic or Championship or Open or Invitational, just the Northern Trust. Not to be confused with the Northern Trust Open, which we now call the Genesis Invitational in Riviera. Nothing to do with that event. That's a West Coast event. We're here in New Jersey, where this event is usually takes place around here. You know, we've seen Beth Page host this event back in 2012. We've seen Ridgewood, Plainfield, both in New Jersey. It's really rotational. Glen Oaks in 2017, and last year it was at Ridgewood again when Bryson DeChambeau won. But we've seen Liberty National before in 2013 and 2009. So actual course history is going to be a little sort of hard to come by. We just have those 2 years. We usually don't, you know, go all the way back to 2009. I'm going to look a little bit more at that 2014 event to get a sense of what kind of trends could be important. And they are really interesting, but it is important to note that it's only the 1 year from, you know, 5 years ago. It's not going to be the most quality course history, so we don't really want to factor that in as much. And the course has had a ton of renovations since then. So if there are any weeks to just overlook course history, this would certainly be it. But if we're going to at least start by looking at the 2014 season, we can look at On the historical tab of the research station, you can look at all the finishes and scores of the guys here back in 2014 and where they ranked on the season on tour in all the major stats. And driving distance actually correlated with finish here, 23% compared to 2% for driving accuracy. And given how the course is, it's a little surprising to see that, because the course sort of reminds you in a way of Royal Portrush, where you know at the edge of the fairways, it's not really that much rough before you start to find some fescue and water and all that nastiness. Going to be a lot of double bogeys and such here, but really this course is all about the ball striking. We see strokes gained putting not factoring in pretty much at all. So it's a great week to target the worst putters or really inconsistent putters and hope you get a solid week from them. And strokes gained around the green also factors in about three times as much as putting, but not even half as much as off the tee or approach. And what's interesting is usually strokes gained approach correlates significantly better than all the other stats outside of, like, the major ones like scoring average or sometimes birdie or better percentage. But we actually see strokes gained off the tee, just from the 2014 event at least, strokes gained off the tee really did seem to correlate with success here. The guys that are top 50 in the PGA Tour in driving distance, they performed, they averaged 30 positions higher than guys who are 51st or lower on tour in driving distance. It's kind of a shocker to see. We did see some shorter hitters. Jim Furyk finished 6th. DA Points, Matt Every, also in the top 10 there. If you're looking at just the guys that finished T2 or above, they're all actually guys outside of Woodland, who finished runner-up, who was 40th that year in strokes gained approach. Everyone else from Jim Furyk and up were all in the top 10 in strokes gained approach. Of course, Tiger Woods did not actually have enough rounds to qualify for statistics, but given that he finished like top 10 on tour in strokes gained approach basically every single year of his career, it's probably safe to assume that he would be in the top 10, if not the top 5, if he had enough rounds there. But he was dealing with some injuries and stuff that year, of course, coming after the 2013 season. And we actually see strokes gained off the tee correlating as much as scoring average and birdie or better percentage, which is really interesting. We also see bogey avoidance popping way up there, compared to what we usually see. But again, this is just one year. We don't have the quantitative data exactly, and the conditions of the time could have also factored into being such a seemingly a bomber's ball striker's course. As far as like strokes gained approach, though, it's very obvious why the best of the best were able to do so well here. The way that the greens are set up, the pin locations, it's going to be very tricky to land the ball on the green this week. And, you're going to be struggling if you are scrambling in. It's definitely a place where you don't want to be errant with your tee to green game, for sure, because there's a lot of water in play, a lot of really nasty bunkers. And, of course, if you get a little too far out there, the fescue is completely unforgiving. We saw tons and tons of double bogeys here, way more than average. So, that with combined the fact that there's all that water out there, it should lead to variance levels overall being pretty darn high, and a premium sort of placed on ball striking. Strokes gained off the tee, strokes gained approach, and short game can kind of go by the wayside a little bit here. You might want to look at scrambling around the green a lot more than putting, which you can basically fade. I would only really look to guys who are particularly good Bermuda putters. But even then, not that big of a deal. Bogey avoidance also probably factors in more than other weeks. As far as the types of holes on the course, we've got five long par fours. And that's kind of the bread and butter there. It's really kind of spread out. No crazy splits like last week where we had like the eight medium length par fours and nothing like that. Just five long par fours, three short par fours, and that's actually a little bit more than normal. Three medium length par fours, which is the most common hole type. So outside of the long ones, you know, we'll actually see more short ones than medium ones that we're used to seeing. And three long par threes. They're pretty darn long. Two of them over 200 yards. One of them pretty close. And then the one really short par three, the 150 yarder. Then as for the par fives, we got two short ones and then one that's over 600 yards, a very long par five that, you know, players definitely won't be able to hit into unless they get like some serious wind or something. So like I was saying, it sort of reminds you of a very, very flat version of what we saw in Royal Portrush. Of course, that's not, it's not a Lynx style course at all. There are just some vague similarities to it. It is sort of by the coastal line there. It's not really played on sand, obviously, but it is a wide open course. And yeah, you're going to want to really sort of fade the chalk, I guess. It's the first thing that pops into my mind whenever we go to a place like the Honda Classic, Sawgrass, you know, whenever I see all that water in play. Although, you know, most of the water on this course is actually kind of benign. You know, you've got a lot of tee shots that are over water, and you would have to hit a tee shot like I hit a tee shot to even have that water come into play. But there are some spots where it can get tricky and guys will find the drink for sure. But yeah, anyway, you know, there are situations like that. And just looking at the extra variance on the course, the number of double bogeys that we saw before, and the renovations, how unfamiliar guys are with this course, we should see a bit more variance than normal, some blow-up holes on some guys, perhaps, and also guys figuring out the course as the week goes along. Maybe you could expect some higher showdown scores as we get into the weekend, but also weather will probably come into play. Definitely look to that Wednesday night as we get down to finalizing everything, looking at the weather, looking at Vegas odds movements, and again at dfsarmy.com, promo code TACO, you can gain access to all of our premium offerings there. So be sure to definitely do that. Check us out, especially if you want to listen to the deep dive into the player pool in this pod. Of course, for the free members here, we get we go through pretty much the 10,000 above guys. For the VIP members, we get the full deep dive down into the pod. Gets very, very in depth, especially for those who are into that sort of thing. I really want to dig really deep into the statistics and get a nice breakdown. That's available to our VIP members here at dfsarmy.com. Let's look right into this field here. Sort of look at the field as a whole first. Now, this is a really interesting part of the season because pretty much everybody here has a really solid sample size. We don't have the sponsor exemptions. We don't have the amateurs. We don't have the qualifiers. We don't have the randomweb.com or Champions Tour guys or former winners that are exempt. We, you know, those sort of guys, every single week they populate the low 6K range, the low 7K range on FanDuel, and they're like 1,000 to 1, and they don't really matter. This week, everybody that's in the field is in the top 125 in FedEx Cup points, and they're at least decent. They have at least some good finishes on the year, or they're just grinding it out like crazy. And even then, it's really hard to just grind it out and make it. You've got to have some quality finishes. So if you look to the dead minimum price here, right, you've got, you know, Max Homa, who literally won a few months ago at the Wells Fargo. You know, K.H. Lee has been kind of crappy lately, but has had some top five finishes. Same with Tyler Gooch, top five finishes. Danny Lee, some top five finishes. Patrick Rogers has been out for a little while, but earlier in the year, what do you have? Some top five finishes. Chesson Hadley, same thing. Adam Long literally won a tournament. So a lot different than most weeks. The highest we see anyone in the odds right now is Adam Long at 490-1. And that does really change a bit of the dynamics about, punting. I think that's definitely way, way more of the way to go this week. And you've got almost all the studs up top. Only a few guys have taken the week off so far. My boy Henrik Stenson, he decided that, you know, he's already won a PGA Tour FedEx Cup championship. He doesn't care about this year. He's not participating. He's got some stuff to do. I hope he really gets more into the course design part of his career. So that's something I think will be really cool going forwards. Hopefully we can go to some Henrik Stenson designed courses. And, you know, we've seen a lot of golfers in the past head towards either that or broadcasting as they reach the end of their careers there. Of course, Stenson's still got a lot of ahead of him. He's, you know, won a major not too long ago. And he's not even that old. But, you know, it's whatever with Stenson. Yeah, that's the last time we'll see him until probably like WGC China or something, or maybe some. He honestly might really go for the Race to Dubai, which we'll see after the FedEx Cup playoff ends and the European Tour. Maybe focus more on that. I've also got Sam Burns, who literally had his ankles broken on the court, the basketball court, by some young kids. Said he was going for a rebound and hurt his ankle real bad, but I know what he really means. You know, he's trying to cross over this little 8-year-old kid, gets swiped, gets his ankles broken, and he's just taking the rest of the year off out of pure embarrassment. I feel you, Sam Burns. Really liked rostering you, but until another time, I guess. I think he's got his card set up for next year, so it's not that big of a deal. We had Rafael Cabrera-Bello also withdraw. I don't think he's going to care about the FedEx Cup playoffs. I think he's definitely looking more towards the win the championship over in Europe, the Race to Dubai. And Paul Casey also just took the week off. I think he just has enough points to where he doesn't really care and would rather just rest up. So other than that, we've got all the best golfers in the world here. And starting off at $12,000 on DraftKings and $12,200 on FanDuel is Brooks Koepka. None other at this point. If you eliminate a couple of stretches of times where he was injured, he's dealt with two relatively serious injuries over the last several years. If you really get rid of those stretches of times, he's been absolutely amazing. He was the number one golfer in the world by a long shot now after winning the WGC Bridgestone a few weeks back where we last saw him. Kind of a night and day difference, obviously, if you look at events that matter and events that don't. Because since the Masters, where he finished runner-up, we've seen him finish top five or win at the Byron Nelson, the PGA Championship, the U.S. Open, Open Championship, and, of course, the WGC Bridgestone. And whenever it's just a random old event that he goes to, the Canadian Open, which he also missed the cut at horribly last year, and the Travelers, the 3M, you know, these really crap fields where he was, like, the favorite by far. His best finish is T50. So, of course, everyone sort of has a take on him. He's only motivated for big events and all that. So, definitely saw him show up to play in Bridgestone. Just took over come the weekend. He's so good when he's on, obviously. We saw in 2014, at least four people withdrew. You know, sometimes you do see people withdraw from this tournament. I don't think he'd be the type to do that. I'm just saying that sometimes when you're ahead by so much and you're pretty much guaranteed to be in the top 30 at the end there, maybe the motivation isn't terribly huge, but I think Capcom's probably heard it enough to where he's probably looking to shut down any of that talk. I wouldn't be surprised to see him sometime soon just pick up some random event and just run away with it. I think he's going to be fine for GPP. I wouldn't pay up for that in cash outside of FanDuel, where the price difference between him and Rory is a lot smaller. Really, him and the rest of the field's a lot smaller than the huge difference on DraftKings over there. He's at $12,000, and at $12,000, we usually like to see a guy who's 6-1, you know, 5-1, 6-1 around there. He is 7-1 right now. It's not terrible. Of course, you know, DraftKings scoring wise, he gains 29 fantasy points per event to the field. So I compare that to Rory, who's sitting at 20. Dustin Johnson is sitting at 17. Rahm is sitting at 12. Justin Thomas, who's sitting at 9. It's a huge difference from the other studs there. Very good at picking up eagles and birdies and all that. Especially when you consider, you know, tee to green being so important. And also Bermuda greens, he really, really putts a lot better on Bermuda greens. If you look at his last 50 rounds, he averages 4 times more strokes gained on Bermuda greens than just his overall numbers there. So that's pretty neat. The two splits that I put on the field rank splits in the research station this week are field ranks in less than driver courses and in strong fields. Of course, what a field rank is if you finish first, that's 100%. If you finish last, that's 0%. Just tells you what percentage of the field that you beat. And he's been to 6 less than driver courses this week, which I forgot to mention the course breakdown. It's going to be one of the things we'll see here with the design of the course. It's that even though strokes gained off the tee and driving distance seem to have really correlated with success here, it's honestly a place where most people will be clubbing down and just hitting the fairway instead of going for it. And the way that a lot of the holes are constructed, you don't really need to bomb it for anything, you know, because sometimes hitting it longer actually gives you a worse angle into the green. Well, at less than driver courses, he has a 68% field rank in those. Of course, in strong fields, it's at 80%. Very good number there, of course. You know, he obviously shows up in strong fields and for big events. That's a no-brainer there. Everything else statistically rates out just fine. Rory, of course, significantly more strokes gained off the tee than Brooks. Of course, a little bit of the, you know, some of the numbers with Brooks a little skewed because he finished top 5 at the Open Championship, finished runner up at the Masters. We don't get any strokes gained data from all of that. We did at the PGA Championship and the US Open, but you know, we've just had these random majors, you know, Open Championship, that's understandable. But for some reason, the Masters, they never want to give us strokes gained data. But I'm sure his numbers would be a little bit more boosted after plugging those in, especially with, you know, he'd definitely look a bit better compared to Rory when you, you know, remember that Rory missed the cut at the Open Championship and it was only a T21 at the Masters. I think he does deserve to be the highest salaried guy. I think on DraftKings, Rory is going to be a better play. I think that perhaps people also agree with me there, and he'll see more ownership over there. But on FanDuel, it's extremely, extremely easy to afford him. You can afford him on DraftKings, but on FanDuel, it's excruciatingly easy to afford Brooks Koepka. And just with how often he wins and how well he does in these strong field events, I think it's going to make him extremely popular. We've seen his ownership being depressed repeatedly, especially with those, you know, weak finishes at regular events, kind of, you know, tampering his ownership, that and the prices just being jacked up. We've barely seen him break out of the teens, but we could see him in the higher teens, maybe even up into the 20s, and on FanDuel, maybe even talking about the 30s in ownership. You're definitely not being sneaky playing Brooks this week, coming off of a win. And then moving on down the field here, I've got Rory McIlroy. Of course, off the tee, he is the best stroke scanned off the tee, period. So, you know, seeing how important that is for this week really makes me want to play Rory a lot. He excels at the Lesson Driver courses, 84% field rank. And also, like Brooks, he's at 80% field rank in strong fields. The around the green game has been spectacular for him, gaining over a round or gaining over a stroke per round over his last 10 rounds. And of course, the off the tee stuff, he's the best. You don't really need to speak on that much. Strokes gained approach numbers have kind of fallen off a little bit recently. Sort of part of his problem at the Open Championship, but also just him not being able to putt. But overall, he's been really good with his putting over the last like year or so. But he does struggle in a sense, like zero strokes gained. So he's just very average at Bermuda, where he gains, you know, 0.3 to 0.5 strokes everywhere else. And over the last 10, we actually see him gaining 0.8 strokes per round. So, you know, Rory, I think he's perfectly fine. You know, this course does favor people that have an overall well-rounded skill set with no real weaknesses, because your weaknesses will be sort of exploited unless it's maybe like putting. Even then, still you gotta putt for the dough, but it just seems to be punished a lot less than the others. So I do like Rory, especially on DraftKings, where he's $600 cheaper than Koepka, and even on FanDuel. You know, it's really between him and Koepka for number one golfer in the world right now. And, you know, if you look back the last 10 years, you know, you think of the number one golfer probably going to be Rory. He has that upside. And we saw just a couple of years ago how he can just turn it on during these FedEx Cup playoffs. He absolutely crushed it. And that's something I can see him doing easily again this year. So he's second in projected round score and projected DraftKings fantasy points per round. That comes in ahead of Koepka and Dustin Johnson as far as the DraftKings fantasy scoring goes, but he's right there with him. Dustin Johnson, number one in projected round score. As far as DraftKings points goes, DJ's been struggling a little bit lately, and we'll get to him in a second, but Rory... You know, he just rates out really well across the board. The only issue I do see is way more double bogeys than anyone else 9K or above. He has the most by a pretty considerable margin there. That's just something I'm looking at there. So he's definitely a GPP only play. I'm not playing these top two guys. Really, the top guys in this field, I'm not really playing them in cash. They're going to be GPP plays for me, even though you can easily get to them. It's just going to be a really heavy part of the GPP rotations, you know, putting them in a lot of lineups up there. I just don't think either of them will be particularly sneaky, but I do like their winning upside and, of course, their fantasy point scoring. And then you look at Dustin Johnson. He's $10,700 on DraftKings. On FanDuel, he's like $100 cheaper than Rory. As where he's $700 cheaper than Rory on DraftKings and like $1,300 cheaper than Brooks on DraftKings compared to $300 cheaper on FanDuel. So needless to say, on FanDuel he's going to be really low owned, but even on DraftKings I see him being low owned. So since finishing runner up at the PGA Championship and the Masters earlier this year, he's yet to crack the top 20. Like he has finishes right on the dot of 20th place at Canadian Open, where he was a massive favorite, along with Brooks and Rory there. And, of course, Rory ended up winning that. And really, since then, you know, struggled at the U.S. Open, T35. That's, like, his event where, you know, that's the major he's supposed to win. That's when he has won. Missed the cut at the Rocket Mortgage Classic. Did not look good there. Of course, that course, I went there. Saw that it was clearly a bomber's course. So sort of an extra bad miscut there, because it was a bomber's course. It was a super easy field, super weak field, and his putting was just absolutely miserable. That has been what screwed him recently, honestly, is his putting. It's just been horrendous. At the Open Championship, you saw him struggle to a T51 finish there. And then 20th at the WGC event a few weeks back is not like a 20th in 150 some person field. That was a 65 person field or so. Not very good at all. So, you know, and especially at the no cut style events, you know, DJ is someone that we see gaining a lot of fantasy points to the field usually, but not so much anymore. Just been struggling a little bit here. And with the depressed ownership like that, of course, it really keeps you interested. He does rank number one in projected round score, but third in projected DraftKings fantasy points per round. And, you know, it's if you have no problem looking past some recent struggles and also missing the cut here in 2014, which he did, honestly, he's a perfectly fine, like, you know, GPP contrarian play, because he's probably going to be the only stud up here in single digits as far as ownership goes. That's perfectly fine. You can do that. Still gains strokes off the tee and approach and around the green. It's just been that putting. It's been bad. And that's a really good reason to make that sort of play, right? Because he can't just stay putting miserably. Over his last 50 rounds, he gains 0.2 strokes on average putting, but averages 0.5 strokes gained on Bermuda greens. And he has an 88% field rank in less than driver courses, and strong fields, 88% field rank too. So that's better than the first two guys we talked about. So I like DJ as a nice bounce back GPP play for sure. Obviously, you're not going to go there in cash, and he is like the one stud, you know, usually priced up in the 10, 11, 12K range that you might actually consider for cash because of his consistency and his low double bogey or worse percentage. But this really doesn't seem like the best week for him. We're even seeing his strokes gained off the tee kind of slow down a lot. 0.4 strokes gained off the tee over his last 10 rounds there. That's not the DJ that we know and love. Of course, that should regress back. But yeah, that's you know, that's pretty much what you gotta look forward to with DJ this week. Just sort of a contrarian play. Not a bad play to really go in on and just kind of cross your fingers and hope. I just really didn't like his miscut at the Rocket Mortgage Classic. Granted, that was a new course and all, but that was an extremely, extremely simple course. The Open Championship, I can look past that, no problem. But yeah, it's just been repeated crappy performance after crappy performance since really since the PGA Championship, but it's Dustin Johnson. You know, he has considerable upside and all that. Can definitely get some eagles. And he's honestly a little safer than Rory and Brooks, but I don't think he has their upside this week. He's in at 15-1 also. Probably the lowest odds I've seen him at, or highest odds. However you want to look at it. Odds are confusing. But definitely the worst odds I've seen for DJ in quite a while, in any field, really. So underneath him, we've got John Rahm at $10,400. Dude has been really awesome as far as finishes go this year. Statistically, has not been wonderful. You know, strokes gained off the tee, that's sort of his calling card. But he's doing the same thing as DJ and Brooks, where they're all right in the same range here. You can throw Justin Thomas in this too. They're all like right at 0.4 strokes gained off the tee over the last 10 and like 0.7 over the last 25. But usually these guys are guys who would, you know, be more towards like the one strokes gained per round number that we see Rory at. So of course, you know, we don't get to see the numbers from the Open Championship, where of course he opened with that amazing first round, and you know, after that it was just sort of, you know, variance with all the wind and craziness that went on there. But did finish T11 there. It was really awesome. He's pretty much like the ultimate boom or bust sort of guy this year, because he's either coming like top 10 or he's like missing the cut dreadfully, and that's something we do see a lot. It makes the statistics look probably a lot worse than they are. If you look at field rank consistency, you see like Rory's at 0.2, so he has about a 20% variation on average. Dustin Johnson at 0.18. We see John Rahm all the way at 0.29, which is one of the highest numbers in the entire field. That's like almost Ryan Palmer level of inconsistency. He's either missing the cut or he's finishing top 10. That sounds really good for tournaments. And, you know, usually he does perform a lot better at the courses where, you know, we consider them like bomber courses. But this is just very interesting because the off the tee, you know, strokes gained off the tee numbers and driving distance, at least in 2014, that one time, they really did factor in a bunch, and it would make you think to use some John Rahm, but honestly, he's been 66% field rank in the strong field, 68% the less than driver courses, although he's only been to four of them. Not the most encouraging numbers, 28th in projected round score, 32nd in projected DraftKings fantasy points per round. But just know of anyone, he has like probably the widest ranges of outcomes of any of these studs. Now, moving down to Justin Thomas at $10,000, probably the last guy I'll talk about in the free portion of this pod. So he's been just a completely different golfer since coming back off of the injury there. Of course, he missed the cut horribly at the Memorial and the U.S. Open. He also missed it by a couple strokes there. He was 20th at the Canadian Open, right as he was running back into form there. And what we saw from him repeatedly was amazing tee to green and just miserable putting. And this is a guy that usually putts at least decent, right? But his putting has just been god-awful. I sort of turned it around recently, finishing 11th at the Open Championship, where he got no stats from, and then 12th at the WGC Bridgestone, which is pretty good, defending his title there, just at a different course. So he actually ranks number one in projected DraftKings points per round, just raw scoring points, but 7th in projected round score. We also see that, recently he's actually lost a birdie to the field on average per event, and that's just average to four rounds. That's something that we definitely don't see with the top guys we talk about. They're all in like the 2 to 4 birdies gained to the field range, but that's just recently. You go long term, it's 2.6, which is the exact same number as Rory and Brooks Koepka. So if Thomas is really back, we should expect to see those putts start to go in. And I kind of outlined that as the plan for this week, sort of just focus on the guys who are doing good, tee to green, and just not really worry about the short game as much. He is the really expensive example of that, and you can see with the fantasy point upside, and I think he also has some really solid splits as far as that goes. Yeah, so he's 6th in the field in long par 4 scoring, and 2nd in the field in short par 5 scoring. Of course, you get the 2 par 5s, and that's where most of the fantasy points will be made, on those two holes. So probably a pretty good reason to use some Justin Thomas. I think he's shown enough form that I'm not worried about this putting. It's going to be a very strong play for me. 17-1 odds right now. It's kind of low for him, but given the strength of the field, that's fine enough. He's yet to break the top 10 since coming back at least, but I think he's definitely someone that can compete up there. So again, not cash game worthy. Still haven't found anyone worth it for cash yet. We will as we get into the 9K range here, but Justin Thomas looking like a solid GPP option for me. Sort of like Rahm, DJ Rory Brooks. These guys up top really are all really solid GPP options, because the best of the golfers in the world tend to sort of they're all sort of very similar in their play style. They're all bombers. Every single one of these guys hits the ball over 300 yards, most of them over 305, 310. They're not necessarily going to be like the world's best putters. That's not how you become the best golfers in the world. It's that that off the tee game, that approach game, really the tee to green game. It's what we're looking for this week. It's sort of why they're the favorite, why they're so good. So just don't really love any of them for cash until we get down a little bit lower here. So the cash lineup might look a little bit more balanced than the GPP lineups, but these guys are all picture perfect for GPP. The punt plays are so good that studs and scrubs, it's going to be a popular lineup construction, but it's definitely looking like the way to go this week. So that'll do it for the free portion of this podcast. Again, at dfsarmy.com, you can go there, gain access to the rest of the deep dive into this field, where we'll scrub through all the relevant stats and information for each of these guys, and I'll give you my take on them. You can kind of do whatever with it. But dfsarmy.com, promo code TACO, help support the pod, and get you 20% off a lifetime discount. So check that out. You can use the link below, I do believe. on YouTube or whatever podcast service you're using to listen to this. And for you VIP members, I'll see you in a little bit. For the rest of you guys, I'll see you next week at the BMW Championship.